Here we go, taking you home on a rainy Thursday afternoon. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. It is also draft day. NFL draft taking place in Cleveland later tonight, starting at 8 o'clock. Of course, we'll have all your draft day updates, courtesy of Westwood One, right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch, our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862, 46862. Of course, you heard the breaking news that apparently Aaron Rodgers is not 100% set on returning to the Green Bay Packers. This is being, I don't know, at this point, Caleb, or is it being blown out of proportion? We know Aaron Rodgers has been happy with the Packers for a couple of years, and maybe he's got aspirations to kind of go Hollywood on us and, you know, go to look at other opportunities that he might have. There's plenty of days and plenty of times where you get frustrated or disappointed, or maybe there's days where you're just not 100% thrilled with your job, and maybe you might say something where, you know, I don't even feel like going to work today. Is that just Aaron Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers? Are we supposed to make something of this? Is it going to force Green Bay's hand to make a trade? I don't know. I think at this point, maybe it's an overreaction, but we'll find out.
Yeah, I think if you're expecting Aaron Rodgers to be traded tonight, maybe tone it down.
Yeah.
Okay. This doesn't necessarily mean that he is going to be traded somewhere this evening and Packers are going to start Jordan Love or get a quarterback themselves and get a big haul of draft picks. This just, you know, this is a report and someone just texted in, and I think this is fitting. Do you think that the situation with Seattle and Russell Wilson a while back and the situation with Aaron Rodgers now could spark a trade between Green Bay and Seattle? I don't know about that.
Russell Wilson had made it clear he had certain teams that he would be willing to be traded to or preferred to be traded to, and Green Bay was not one of them.
No.
And I don't know if they it will be. Not exactly the best market for a singer to go to Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, there are a lot of recording studios in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I don't know that Russell Wilson is going to end up in Green Bay. Now, you know, I think if there was going to be a deal, and I'm sure Green Bay would like to have a little more time to maybe negotiate this and talk about it, but I think it would make sense what you and Kent were talking about just moments ago, that San Francisco and Green Bay start talking. Because San Francisco obviously is looking for a quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo is not the worst option for Green Bay if Aaron Rodgers is not going to play this year for Green Bay. But I don't know how serious this is. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, is it being reported as something that has real substance, or is it just one of those off-the-cuff remarks that someone repeats and then the next thing you know, it becomes a bigger story than what it is? I'm not going to buy that Aaron Rodgers is not going to play in Green Bay next fall. I mean, I would think that Green Bay is committed to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is still committed to Green Bay. That's where it's going to be. But if there was some substance to it, I think the best deal for Green Bay would be probably to try to swap a deal with San Francisco, maybe get that number three pick, get Jimmy Garoppolo, and move forward. You can take a quarterback at number three. You can move forward with a new quarterback. I don't know if that would be ideal, but you get Garoppolo for a couple of years to start while you're still competing for the playoffs. You get a quarterback then in waiting. Plus, you've still got Jordan Love. I mean, I guess you don't even have to take a quarterback at number three. Could you imagine if Kyle Pitts ends up going to Green Bay at number three and you get Garoppolo and Kyle Pitts out of the deal? I mean, that would be a pretty good deal for the Green Bay Packers if they move off of Aaron Rodgers. And yes, he's still getting older, but it's perfect for San Francisco, who wants to win right now and feels they've got the team that can still compete for a playoff position and maybe compete for a championship, to get a quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it would work for both sides, but I don't think you've got the time to kind of work out and iron out a deal in this short of term.
Well, unfortunately, this reported out there, the 49ers offer the Packers that third overall pick, plus other picks and a number of players from their current roster, including Garoppolo, for Aaron Rodgers. The Packers turned them down.
Well, so there you go.
So again, it seems like a perfect match, but apparently
the 49ers did jump on it when they thought about it. They jumped on it, but apparently the Packers said, no, we're not going to react to this. This is just Aaron being Aaron. We're used to it. He's been here long enough that we know these kind of things are said. And we expect him to still be here when football season rolls around in the fall. We'll see how much is made of it between now and the start of the draft. My gut tells me it's an overreaction to an Aaron Rodgers-ism. That this is just Aaron being Aaron, and a lot of people are overreacting. It is not Aaron making an official statement or telling the Packers, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming to workouts. I'm not going to report to training camp. I just don't feel like it's going to go to that or escalate to that. Now, does the timing of it coincide with pressure on the Packers to make a draft pick that satisfies Aaron Rodgers? Because remember, last year, Rodgers was not happy that the Packers were not taking a wide receiver. So is this whole thing set up and the timing of it announced right before the draft to apply some pressure to Green Bay to trade up, to go get a wide receiver, go get one of the marquee guys, whether you consider that Waddle, Ja'Marr Chase, if that's possibly Devontae Smith, is it someone else? I mean, I heard you guys talking about Rondale Moore earlier. I don't know if he's the marquee guy that Aaron Rodgers would get all excited about, but does it put pressure on Green Bay to make a deal to go up and get a wide receiver and say, we're committed to you, Aaron Rodgers, we hear you, and we're going to adjust our draft to kind of satisfy you in a way? I mean, that seems to be what the position is right now. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You can let us know what you think about the whole Aaron Rodgers situation with Green Bay. You know, I did think that Green Bay would be one of those teams, because of all the draft picks that they've got, that they would want to creep up in that first round and try to get better. What do they have right now, 28 or 29? What is their first round pick, Caleb? It's 28 or 29, isn't it? I thought that they might be one of those trade partners that the Colts could use to trade down.
So the Packers are 29 forever.
Okay, so you got to figure that the Packers are not going to want to sit back and wait until 29 with all the draft capital that they have, because they've got the leverage to move up. And how high they move up might depend on how much of that leverage they want to use, which is the draft capital that they've earned. What do they have, 10 draft picks or something like that this year? I know they got a boatload of them.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yep, 10 draft picks.
10 draft picks, plenty of draft picks. You put three or four of those together, you can jump up probably top part of the first round. You might get in the top 10 if you want to. And so if the Packers, so I'm wondering, I really am wondering if this is just a big setup for Aaron Rodgers to apply pressure to Green Bay to go up and get somebody that they know he wants. He may have already told them, guys that he really likes and would like to have join the Packers organization. And maybe Rodgers is sitting there thinking, I'm not hearing news about Green Bay trading up. We're hearing a lot of teams that are trying to trade up into the top 10. Green Bay's got the leverage to do it. I'll come out, say this, or this will get reported. And then maybe that will put pressure on the organization to jump up and take one of the guys that I'd like to see as a potential target and a potential receiver that I can have on the team with me next year. I mean, it's very possible. I mean, if you put together three of those picks, maybe four of those picks, and throw an extra number one in down the road, you could probably get into the top 10, I would think. They've got the leverage to do it. And I think you've got teams in the top 10 that would be interested if they could collect more picks. Carolina is one of them. Carolina needs multiple positions. Detroit needs multiple positions. Maybe this is something that Rodgers is trying to apply a little leverage to get Green Bay to go up and get a particular guy.
Well, we'll probably hear from Aaron Rodgers this weekend because he's heading to the Kentucky Derby. I'm sure somehow there will be an interview on a red carpet or something.
There will be a microphone waiting for Aaron Rodgers to get his response. Well, we'll see what all comes down from this, but I'm sure that will be a story that will be talked about all the way up until the beginning of the draft, because really the start of the draft does not have a lot of intrigue. I mean, we know who pick number one is going to be. We know who pick number two is going to be. We thought maybe this Aaron Rodgers news would make it kind of interesting when you get to the third pick, but right now you've got Trevor Lawrence going number one. You've got Zach Wilson, who's going to go number two to the New York Jets. And then what will San Francisco do? Could San Francisco perhaps, Caleb, and I've brought this up a couple of times, and the more I think about it, I'm convincing myself And maybe I'm not 100% sold on it, but I'm thinking this would be one of the most genius plays in the history of plays in the NFL if San Francisco made the move up to number three, not for a quarterback, but they made it sound like they were going up to get a quarterback. But they were getting ahead of Atlanta in the three spot. They were going up and getting above Atlanta so that they could take Kyle Pitts. Because here's the thing. It's presumed Atlanta is going to take Kyle Pitts. So if you want Kyle Pitts, you've got to jump above the number four spot and get to number three. If you say you're taking a quarterback, now anybody who is completely committed to Kyle Pitts is not going to go up and try to steal the number two pick away from the Jets, because the Jets could say, you know what, we can go down to number five or number six, and we can probably still get Zach Wilson if someone's going up to take Kyle Pitts at number two. So wouldn't it be interesting, and the shock of shocks tonight, if San Francisco made this whole play and got all of the media convinced that they were moving up to take a quarterback, and even said that quarterback was Mac Jones? Because I think the one thing that makes us not believe this is that neither one of us thinks Mac Jones is worthy of trading up to get a number three pick. We feel like it's a Mitch Trubisky 2.0. And wouldn't it be interesting if San Francisco's actually jumping up above Atlanta to snag Kyle Pitts before they get a shot at him? It wouldn't be the worst move, I don't think.
I mean, I understand that Kyle Pitts is, you know, looked at as this incredible talent and size, but let's not forget the fact that tight ends aren't drafted high for a reason. I'm not saying that he's going to be a bust, but I'm just saying, like, you know.
That's the thing is, I guess when you have one of those opportunities in the top of a draft, you don't want to blow it. I mean, the Colts took Quentin Nelson with a number six pick. Was that smart to take an offensive guard where there's usually plenty of them available in the second, third, and fourth round? Was it smart to go up and get an offensive guard with pick number six? No one's saying that was a bad pick or a bad move by the Colts. And, of course, the Colts traded down and got him at number six. But the whole idea is that sometimes you take players that don't fit the traditional mold of who you should take in a certain spot based on their position. And if you don't need a quarterback, then you have to evaluate. Can we get a player that could impact our franchise long term? Kyle Pitts is that kind of guy. He stays healthy. He's a very gifted athlete. He's got great hands, 45 receptions, had zero drops last season at Florida. I mean, it would be one of the best moves ever made, I think, in the NFL if San Francisco pulls this off and it actually is Kyle Pitts. I can't wait to hear the number three pick. I'm expecting to hear Mac Jones. It would not surprise me to hear Trey Lance. But I would be loving it if I hear Kyle Pitts, because San Francisco would have pulled one over on everybody if it ends up being Kyle Pitts to the San Francisco 49ers with the number three pick. And the one who would be really caught with their pants down is Atlanta, because then what does Atlanta do? Now Atlanta's got an opportunity at a quarterback of their choice, right? So Atlanta would have to probably shuffle and decide, okay, now what direction do we go? Are we committed to Matt Ryan? He's 35 years old. Or do we go for the quarterback? Maybe a Trey Lance, maybe a Mac Jones, maybe a Justin Fields, who I think Atlanta, if they picked a quarterback, I think they would go Justin Fields.
I would agree with that. If he falls that far,
Fields will be on the board regardless. At least that's our expectation, that Atlanta could have their option. They could take Kyle Pitts. They could take Justin Fields. If they want to go Justin Fields, he'll still be on the board at four.
So much about the NFL draft to me is not necessarily what spot you go in, but how do you fit in with that team? And there are so many talented players who, I mean, their careers did not work at all simply because it was just a really bad fit.
Bad system.
We see it all the time. And, you know, some of these guys, they come in, their team's terrible. Then they cycle through offensive coordinators, you know, their first few seasons. And it's just hard to get into a rhythm and build anything. And that's, you know, ultimately, to me, it's more about fit than it is, what number were you drafted? Because that's, I mean, to me, fit is so much more important. Now, in the NBA, I mean, it's all about projection, obviously, and, you know, the peak of their talent level, assuming they're a guy who's, you know, 20, 21 or younger. That's all about projecting them forward. But the NFL to me is all about fit. And some of these guys may be available, but they may not be a good fit for whatever team, you know, that drafts them.
Yeah, you have to kind of accept where is the franchise and how committed is the franchise to being patient and letting a player develop, and especially a quarterback, which there seems to be very little patience for anymore. You know, I was thinking about when you talk about the draft and about the NBA, I was thinking of a guy like RJ Barrett, who wasn't exactly terrific and was very inconsistent for the Knicks last year. But this year, all of a sudden, RJ Barrett's become a star for New York. Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, and the Knicks are actually legit. Now, they're not going to win the East because they're not going to get through that wall that's been set up by Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. But they're not a team you probably want to see on your playoff schedule. They're just dangerous enough that you probably don't want to have to play them, but I don't see them winning the East. But boy, what a jump they've made, and what a big jump in improvement RJ Barrett has made between year one, year two. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Glad to have you on board with this draft day special edition of the Sports Rush up until 6 o'clock. 46862, send us your draft day questions, 46862. I'll tell you this, the Colts come up at number 21 tonight, and I don't think we're going to hear an Indianapolis Colts draft pick. I just, in my gut, I think that Chris Ballard is going to trade down. He loves quantity of picks. They're already short a third rounder because of the Carson Wentz deal. I think he'll look to get that third rounder back, maybe even an extra second rounder. I think when the Colts come up on the clock, we're going to hear that the Colts have traded the pick with someone. My thought was that it was going to be Green Bay. We'll see if the Packers still decide to move up. But, you know, there's three main reasons why I think the Colts are going to trade down. Number one, because Chris Ballard does love quantity of picks over maybe the quality picks, and he's done very well with second rounders. Number two, the way they scout players. They scout players for value that fit a system, that are the right type of players, and I think they go deeper with players, which means they're able to find more diamonds in the rough because of the way they scout. The in-depth questions and how they evaluate players. I'll tell you, if you haven't checked it out, have you seen the series? I think last year was the first year they did it with the Indianapolis Colts online. It's called With the Next Pick. Have you seen that video series, Caleb?
I think, did they not do a Darius Leonard one recently?
The one I just watched was episode 3 for this year, and it was over the course of the last 2 weeks. And they had a couple of meetings with the scouts where they broke down players and they were having their final evaluations. And it is so well done. It's a fascinating behind-the-scenes look at all of the prep that goes into having your team ready to go for draft night. I love it. I mean, I am glued to every one of those episodes. And if you haven't seen the series, I know it's on YouTube. I think you can access it through the Colts website. But it's a series that the Colts produce themselves. And they've got a couple of people behind the scenes that are responsible for the production of it. And they said every time they put together an episode, it has to be approved by Chris Ballard and Frank Reich before it actually goes out. But, and so they don't reveal anything that's overly confidential, but you do get an idea of how they are evaluating players. What are the questions Chris Ballard is asking about players? And one of the big questions he asks about every single player that's considered by the Colts is character. Are they a Colts guy? Are they going to fit in our locker room? Frank Reich stepped up in front of all the scouts and said, it is the most important thing we can consider right now is bringing the right people into this locker room because we have built something special. And every year it's getting better. And it's because we've got great character guys that are committed to being winners, committed to the team first, that they are not selfish, that they want to win for each other. And he says, we cannot bring the wrong type of guy into this locker room. And so they're putting a lot of weight and a lot of value on character guys. Now, that's the one thing that's hard for you and I and most of the media and even the fans to evaluate. We don't talk to these guys. We don't know what they're like off the field. We don't know what their workout regimen is. And so, you know, sometimes it's hard for us when a pick is made and say, what? Who? Why? You know, this guy's on the board. Why did we go this way? That may be behind it. A lot of it may just be finding the right character players to fit with the Colts system. So I think number one, Ballard loves quantity. Number two, the way they scout players. Number three, the value for left tackle, I think, is going to actually come in round two. I don't think you have to go in and force yourself to take that left tackle, which I think we all agree is probably the most important position. Yes, edge rusher is a position that the Colts would like to fill. But in some ways, you can scheme defensively to cover for not having an edge rusher. You can create some unique blitz packages and some different things that you could do to apply pressure to the opposing quarterback. The one thing you can't do is you can't cover for a bad left tackle. I mean, a bad left tackle is going to be a bad left tackle every single play. Missing an edge rusher, you can sometimes cover by the way you scheme your defense. So I think it's more important to get that left tackle position. But I look at the draft and I'm thinking, you know, there's the real possibility that that the value in this draft is going to come for tackle somewhere in perhaps the second round. And the reason I say that is, first of all, you've got three or four offensive linemen that are all considered top 20 prospects. Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, Christian Darrisaw, and Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. Those guys are all considered top 20 prospects. And so there's a chance all four of those guys go off the board. The other one then that comes into play that could possibly be on the board when the Colts draft at 21 is Tevin Jenkins, who's out of Oklahoma State. Yes, you like him, but you also think, are we getting that much more by drafting him than we would if we wait to the second round? Because here's what's interesting. CBS Sports has every prospect in the draft ranked, and the offensive linemen, they've got ranked 2, 11, 14, and 19, and 23. Okay, so they've got five in the top 23. But then there's this big gap before they have any offensive linemen ranked again that drops all the way to 41. But between 41 and 58, you've got seven offensive linemen, which means that area, that, you know, 40s, 50s, there's going to be some value in offensive linemen. And I found this interesting. CBS has Liam Eikenberg ranked as the 80th best prospect, which would put him late into the third round. And I think he's actually going to be probably a mid to early second round pick. I don't know if he goes first round. I know there's some projections and mock drafts that have him going first round. I don't know if Liam Eikenberg goes first round, but I think he's going to be available in the second round. The question is, will he last long enough for the Colts to get a pick in that second round? Because again, they won't pick until later in the second round, and maybe they'll have to bump up to go up and get somebody, but get a guy like Eikenberg. But I do think there's left tackle value in the second round. Here's another reason why I think the Colts are more likely to trade down. I found this interesting, Caleb, that in 2016, you go back and look at the draft from 2016, and when you look at the players selected in picks 19 through 33, there is one player among that group that has become a Pro Bowler. But if you look at picks 34 through 47, there are five guys that have been Pro Bowlers, which means a lot of whiffs were made and a lot of value was picked up on guys that were taken in the second round. Now in 2017, there were two Pro Bowlers that were picked between 20 and 29. Three were picked between 30 and 41. In 2018, you had zero Pro Bowlers in picks 20 through 31, but there were four Pro Bowlers in picks 32 to 40. And that's just players that have made a Pro Bowl from that draft. So if you take the roughly the last third of the first round in 2018, you did not have a Pro Bowler. Now, pick number 32 did become a Pro Bowler. His name's Lamar Jackson. But if you take 20 through 31, there was not a Pro Bowler selected. But if you take from Lamar Jackson through the 40th pick, so what is it, the first eight picks of the second round plus the final pick of the first round, just that group, you've got four of those nine players that ended up making a Pro Bowl. And then in 2019, one Pro Bowler between 10 and 43, but three in picks 44 to 56. So what you're finding is those picks 30 to 45 or so, there can be a lot of value and there can be a lot of talent available. And that's one reason I think that Chris Ballard is more likely to trade down out of 21, because it's not a good pocket of the draft. The history of it just shows that it is not produced like what second rounders have produced. Maybe part of that is guys that are taken in the second round have a little chip. They're second rounders.
There's a lot more motivation if you're picked in the second round to, you know, prove to the teams who passed over you.
Yes. And also prove to the league that you were deserving of better than what you got. And so you've been humbled a bit. And I think that might be part of it too. But second rounders seem to be more productive as far as making Pro Bowls than a lot of the later first round picks. Now, obviously, Pro Bowlers are very heavy if you go the top 10 to 15 picks of each of the NFL drafts. But when you start to get into the 20s, which is where the Colts are going to come up at number 21, there's not been as much production in that part of the round. And so do you get a better player, a better, more productive player, if you take a pick at 21 than you do if you take a pick at 34, 35, 37? History says not necessarily. History says you might get a better player if you wait till early in the second round. So if you do trade down and can somehow snag a pick in the upper part of the second round, I think that's going to be much better for the Colts than if they do use the pick tonight. So I am not going to be surprised at all if Chris Ballard decides, not going to do it, just going to put it off, and we'll wait. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. What do you expect to happen tonight? What are your questions about the draft? Let us know. 46862. We've got coming up next, John Kaufman, coach of the Purdue Fort Wayne Mastodons. And we've got to tell you about some big transfers that they've lined up. Yes, taking advantage of that transfer portal. Mastodons have bolstered their roster, and we'll tell you about it when we return. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. One of the big stories in college basketball is the approval of the transfer rule, which will allow players one free transfer during their eligibility. Coach, I don't know, as a mid-major, what did you think of the rule? Do you like it? Do you have to live with it? What are your thoughts?
Well, Scott, man, thanks for having me on. And, it obviously has been something that's been brewing for, you know, a handful of years. And it is something we just have to live with. I think there's positives and negatives. With it, I think it sometimes can or might end up causing some issues in terms of your accountability and being able to coach young men with the idea that if they take things it doesn't work out and they transfer, that's no good. You want to be able to coach them and grow from that. But has not affected us in that direction in this year, and we've taken advantage of it, and I think gotten two really good players in our program this spring, and we've always been a program that has done well by transfers. We've had some really, really good transfers come into our program and rejuvenate their careers at our spot. I mean, perfect example, Bryson Scott. I mean, he had a tremendous 2 years with us. I mean, he scored over 750 points in year two with us and has two Indiana wins after transferring. So we've done very well by that, but also I think there are some challenges that we're going to see in college basketball.
Let's talk about where you said you took advantage of the transfer portal this year. You're bringing in two talented players, and I don't know if one is courtesy of Coach Marcassano, but coming from the same school, Mount St. Mary's, Damian Chong-Kui is a point guard. Tell us about him.
Well, I would say that does not that did not hurt. Obviously, that she left, and it showcases kind of the higher level of the Horizon League. It probably presented well. Coach Wolf actually. Mike coached there as well. Was a GA when Damian was there as a player during his freshman and sophomore year. But he had a tremendous year this year to where he averaged over 15 points a game, five assists and four rebounds at 5'8". Where I think he's really going to help us is his speed, his creating for others, and I think we're going to help him as well in terms of I mean, we're returning a group. We were the only team in the country this year that shot 50% from the floor, 40% from three. Need to get better with our turnovers. He's going to help us there with being a primary ball handler. He's going to help take Jared off the ball a little bit more to where he can really focus on what he does the best, which is score the basketball. He's going to bring some speed to our transition game. And then what we'll do for him is, you know, we've done a great job with our style of play of raising guys' efficiencies. You know, you look at Jalen Pipkins, who transferred from Loyola, obviously a very good program. Well, he shot, you know, 39% from the floor and 29% from three for those guys a year ago, then comes into our program and in our style of pace and space, shoots 54% from the floor and 44% from three. And so I think our style will really help Damian both increase his efficiency and his volume, because he's going to have, you know, 40% three-point shooters to his right and his left on every possession. You know, that's great for a point guard.
Coach, have you ever had a player on all your time coaching that's 5'8"?
I'm trying to think back. I did it at Stetson. Robbie Givens, who was a really good player for us, all-league player. Now, we listed him at 5'9 or 5'10. So, you know, I don't know if we ever listed a player at 5'8". We're probably in this was in our recruiting. I told our guys in the spring, I said, we may be the only team in the country that is hunting to get smaller. If you look back at the 2016 team that won the league, I mean, we started three guys that were 6'1 or below and played three point guard combo guards all at the same time. You know, that keeps the ball moving. Also, it's hard to keep you out of the paint. And as you look at the Horizon League, it has a number of really, really good small guards and guards that, I mean, they were tough to handle. I mean, you look at Antoine Davis at Detroit. You look at Jalen Moore at Oakland, two of the best guards in our league, and they're small guards. And that's where I think Damian's going to really help us as well. I mean, he takes pride in being a defensive stopper and really uses that size to an advantage. I mean, he'll pick you up full court and does it at a high level and really gets underneath you. So and he's also one to where, I mean, he averaged over 4 rebounds a game, you know, chases balls. I'm hoping that's going to inspire some of our other guards. I'm excited about him in a number of different ways. And then, you know, I think, RJ Ogum, our other transfer from College at Charleston, he's unique in the sense of he's going to have 4 years of eligibility with us. You know, Damian's going to have 2. That COVID year gives him that second one. But RJ's going to have 4 years. He was our top big wing recruit 2 falls ago, and we had the official visit scheduled after College of Charleston. And no knock on Fort Wayne, which I absolutely love, but I also coached at the College of Charleston. It's hard to beat the city of Charleston with a 19-year-old. And so when their coach, Coach Grant, left to go to Boston College, it kind of opened up the door, and you know, we were able to bring RJ back closer to Chicago. And he's somebody that we saw a ton and recruited really, really hard on the front end, and he's got really, you know, great length. He's about 6'6" with great length, rebounds. He's a physical player and can really, really shoot it.
What position is he? More a 4, the way you like to play smaller fours? Yeah. Is he more a 4
guy? He's going to be able to defend fours and rebound at that 4 spot and still stretch defenses at a high level. And is going to bring some great physicality. I mean, he's got a phenomenal. I mean, he did as a you know, senior in high school going in for sure, had a great physique to him already, a college ready body. And now he spent a year, you know, at a colonial program, like at a good college basketball program, you know, winning games. And now he gets to come back to closer to home. And in a style that I think is going to fit him very, very well.
I know it's been a busy spring recruiting and getting set for year number two in the Horizon League. What did you learn about your team, about the league, about what you're going to do to prepare for year number two in the Horizon?
Well, you know, it's tricky because I don't know if I have an accurate feel for our league because COVID affected all of us so differently. We had so many different protocols and so forth. But at the base, when I look back at our team and you take out all the obstacles, you just look at the numbers and where we got to get better. And that is, you know, number one, we got to take care of the basketball better. I think, you know, actually practicing and staying out of quarantine will help you a lot there. But, you know, that's where we added, that's where we added Damian. We also have JoJo Peterson, a guard out of Atlanta. Who's a primary ball handler, won a state championship at Mount Pisgah out of Atlanta, who's going to be a high level. We beat a lot of good programs to get him. I think we're going to add some growth there. Jarvis will be in year two, and, you know, he was a point guard in high school. And so I think that comfortability handling the ball will raise for him. And if you look back at Jared Godfrey's last 10 games, you know, he really, really did a good job improving on his assist to turnover ratio, and sort of came into his own as a point guard combo guard during that the end of that season. So that's number one. Number two is be able to play with the physicality. It's probably a little bit more of a physical league than the Summit League down in the paint area, and that's where we're going to have to defend, you know, kind of those true power forwards, which the league has some of those. And also rebound the basketball, whether it's, you know, we're trapping a post to squeeze it out of there and we get in rotation, or just straight, you know, rebounding, just straight up on one-on-one, just the physicality of that. So, you know, that those are the two biggest areas I think our group has got to get better. I think we did it on the recruiting trail. We're going to work really, really hard this summer in our strength, training and we had 8 newcomers last year to where, you know, I think having another year and having a lot of returners that played a lot of valuable minutes, that's going to really, really help us in year two in the Horizon League.
Where are you at as far as scholarships? Are all the scholarships full for next season?
We have one scholarship available right now that we're being pretty patient on that situation. Feel really good with where we're sitting with our roster spots and, hunting probably best available type player or maybe a young big man, something like that, who can develop as well.
Coach, I know this is the time where you start to make the contacts and start to put together the schedule. I assume we're going to have a regular schedule next year. Where are you at as far as scheduling for next year, and do you count on it being a normal year at this point?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel really good about where we're going with that, with having a regular year, because I feel like the NCAA protocols and what our summer development is going to look like. It with the vaccinations and so forth, it looks like we're progressing to do things a little bit more like we have in past non-COVID years during the summer as we progress. But looking at the schedule, you know, it's still. The mess of last year is still sort of working its way out. So we don't have your travel schedule yet for you. We got some dates on our league schedule. We're going to be playing 22 league games. So we know 22 of those 31 games and, you know, kind of working out the rest of them. But we're going to have a game against Austin Peay, a return game. That is going to be returned after, I guess we took about 2 years off of that because John was on that team, Conchar and Kaysen, that went down to Austin Peay. And then we're going to have a return game with Southeast Missouri. So SEMO is coming back here to Fort Wayne. And then the rest of them are kind of up in the air as we're trying to finalize some contracts.
Well, we'll look forward to the progress of that, and we'll see what happens with the final scholarship. But congratulations on a good recruiting spring so far. We'll talk to you again soon, Coach.
Now, appreciate it, Statman. It's going to be a fun year next year, and looking forward to retiring the cutouts and getting some fans back in the stands.
Absolutely. That is Coach John Kaufman, men's basketball coach, Purdue Fort Wayne, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. By the way, Caleb, I can mention this now. I wasn't going to mention it with Coach Kaufman on the phone, but Mark Emmert got an extension from the NCAA. How on earth, especially given the timing of it, did he convince university presidents and the board or whoever's responsible that he deserved more years at the helm of the NCAA?
I mean, it's kind of the same scenario how the NFL owners love Roger Goodell. It's the same kind of setup. You know, they make these universities, you know, this guy makes my university money. And they're all, you know,
they're all about the dollar.
Yeah. So, I mean, they don't care about the other stuff. They're like, oh yeah, financially. Yeah. It's working.
You can fail the student athletes. You can fail your member institutions, but as long as you send us a big check, we're willing to turn our cheek and not worry about it. Is that that's basically what you're saying, right? In a nutshell. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a timeout. When we come back on the other side, we've got a big hour. It is draft day. They're getting set for the draft in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, where it is low-hanging clouds and rain for the NFL draft tonight. But tonight, round one, we've got your coverage courtesy of Westwood One all evening. So be sure to listen for cut-ins on the NFL draft first round picks. Westwood One will keep us informed, cutting in during Pacers basketball and during White Sox baseball tonight, which we'll also bring you coverage of. We'll give you my mock top 10. Yes, I had to get in the mock game. Caleb, right now, everybody, apparently it's the thing to do. Everybody is doing their mock. So I'm going to do my mock. I got a mock top 10. I don't know how close I'll be, but I wanted to play the game at least, so I'll have a mock top 10. Also, coming up, we'll talk to Tommy Shegler, Parkview Sports Medicine Director. It's time to get back to talking to Tommy. It's been a while. He had a spring break. I had my vacation. We had a couple of preempted shows, so we'll be talking to Tommy Shegler coming up at 5:30. It is a packed hour all the way up until 6 o'clock, and you're listening to The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.